back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. When I put Oriole Park behind me, you know we must be talking some baseball around here. Appreciate our friends at Wise Markets for sponsoring all of our intelligent conversations. We call them Wise Conversations. It's certainly not lost on me when I see that Wise logo off the mound that it is baseball season around here. And Father's Day coming up. We've talked about a lot of books around here, and we did a whole bunch with Jackie Robinson last month the team doesn't give us a whole lot to talk about around here. So we talk baseball history. Rocco Constantino has been writing about baseball for a long time. I follow his work out on the interweb. A new book, Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier, out now. What's going on, Rocco? How are you, brother?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Nestor. I really appreciate you having me on to talk a little baseball history. Baseball in general, always good to have a good conversation about baseball.
Well, you know, the labor of love that doing one of these. I've done four of these in my day. So, I know what it's like to lock yourself down and have a concept to do something. I find it fascinating, the color barrier and the things beyond it. I mean, we hear about Jackie Robinson every year. Every year I hear about the RBI program, and we had Adam Jones here for a decade, and it was going to change things, and kids were going to drop that basketball and start playing baseball, or drop that lacrosse ball in my community and start playing baseball. Some thoughts about the genesis of this and doing this, because there's a lot of stories in baseball, right? I mean, a whole bunch of them. I've been out to Kansas City, been to the Baseball Hall of Fame out there, Negro Baseball Hall of Fame, which actually got a plug here last week as well. The game gets whiter and older, and I think, you know, we all know that. I'm an Orioles fan. You're a Mets fan. We've seen what's happened. It's empty like this all too often around here.
Yeah, that's the truth, and that's a lot of area to cover, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it's, you know, just the genesis of that book. My first book was published through Roman and Littlefield, and they approached me last October, I would say October 2019, and said, we need a book about African Americans in baseball, whether it's the trends or whatever, come up with something. So, you know, I started bouncing some ideas around and came up with the idea. I couldn't really find a comprehensive history that went all the way back to the 1800s and then through today and incorporated the modern trends, which we've seen a significant downturn in participation among African Americans. So that's what the book is. It starts in the 1870s, takes you through the timeline, how the color line was eroded, how Jackie eventually busted through, and then gets a little bit more in depth. And it's not just the topical stuff like you mentioned. You hear about the RBI program, and every so often you'll see somebody who's the next great African-American star in a certain city that's going to change things. And it usually, you know, hasn't come to pass.
Yeah, see, but the Mookie really Betts with the Red Sox. You've already got that. We've already you need to upgrade that one, update that, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. The artwork for the cover goes out way before the book. So in the book, we mentioned the World Series last year and his performance with the Dodgers. But you got him on the Red Sox on the cover, which is good because that's his history anyway. But yeah, so trends are starting to turn, though. I really believe that. It's been between, actually, when the major leagues came back from the player strike of 94 was right when the downturn of participation among African Americans started to happen. And it was gradual. It was a drop by 1% or
there's also a guy named Jordan dribbling right around then,
yeah,
too, as I remember.
And that's great. And you mentioned the Negro Leagues Museum, and I went out and interviewed Bob Kendrick for this book. Was the highlight of my research, and that's exactly what he said. He's like, baseball is not the cool factor anymore. You know, in the 50s and 60s, any kid wanted to grow up and be Willie Mays. Now kids want to grow up. They want to be Kobe, you know, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Lamar Jackson, you know, John Morant, Zion Williamson. They see all these guys. And the cool factor isn't there with inner city urban youth.
You do other things besides write books, right? You're like a director of athletics. Give everybody like what you really do. I know you through baseball writing, but I didn't know you had a real job till I read the book.
Right. My full-time job, I'm the director of athletics at Santa Barbara City College out in California, Santa Barbara. Alumni.
Tough gig for a Mets fan getting to Santa Barbara, man. The only other guy I know out there is my boy Steve Miles is out there in Santa Barbara sunning himself. You know, it's lovely out there, right?
It's a beautiful place. Hey, and the Mets got Jeff McNeil and James McCann are from Santa Barbara, And Jesse Orozco is an alumni at our college. So we got a little bit of a Mets connection there.
Jesse Orozco was an Oriole. Everybody knows that, right?
I think every team can claim him at some point.
He was a good man. I actually was involved. I had a press pass back in the 90s before Mr. Angelos took it from me after the walkout. But Jesse was a good dude. So I like that you know, the old baseball card thing. Like, I put my stuff in an auction last month, my rock and roll stuff. And there's a whole bunch of baseball stuff. I collected baseball cards, and they're like now all the rage. So like, any blast from the past name that comes up, like, I just look here and see Doc Gooden's name on the back of your book, or Hawk Dawson or whatever. And I'm like, you know, that's never coming back for me. I'm never going to feel the way about Manny Machado that I did about George Brett, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I grew up at the same as you, watching 1980s baseball and just those great guys and collecting baseball cards. And those guys were so familiar to you, whether they were superstars or not. I mean, you're sitting there with, you know, dozens upon dozens of Billy Ripken cards, or, you know, any whether they're superstars or common
players. Well, Worthport had the F face on it, though, I think.
right.
For sure.
A couple of those might fetch a little bit of money these
Billy
days.
Has told that story on our airwaves. It's not as interesting as you think, but maybe more interesting than you thought. I don't know. You know.
Hey, it's a part of our childhood, without question.
Well, that and every error card and collecting stuff. My boy Mark Miller telling me the 55 Hank Aaron I had is, you know, now worth 12 grand or something. I'm like, this sickens me a little bit. I had some Clemente cards, you know, back in the day. All my Aparicio cards got lifted, and he's a Hall of Famer, and apparently they're worth a lot of money. So what do I know? Rocco Constantino's here. The book is, I'll read it out to you, Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier, the story of African Americans in Major League Baseball, past, present, and future, as long as my green screen doesn't eat it up here. Yeah. You know, I would say this for a guy who's an historian, as I am, you know, my people came from Venezuela. If they had my color skin and they were from Cuba, they let you in. If you look like my shirt, probably can't play ball in the 50s in America, in most places, right? Early 50s, at least. The notion that it's ever been a person of color's game. I mean, even the people from the islands. I mean, let's be honest. The gringo guys that play the game up until 1973 couldn't cut a break, right? Like, didn't matter if you were Aparicio and you hated Vec and you needed to get to Baltimore, or you're Frank Robinson and you hate the racism in Cincinnati, you need to get to Baltimore. But if you're Steve Carlton and you just hate Augie Bush and you need out of St. Louis, they'd ship you off to Philadelphia too. You know, I would just say, for where the game's been and where it's going, I think they're whistling past the graveyard here to think that African Americans or people of color that aren't from the Dominican or Venezuela are going to suddenly find baseball, you know, in the modern way. So as we say, the era's going out. I don't know that there's going to be another era, you know, that once the Mookie Bettses and the Adam Joneses move on, the CC Sabathias, I don't know where that pipeline is, but, you know, that's not for me to say. But I don't watch College World Series baseball, but it always looks like a bunch of white guys playing when I watch it.
Yeah. And that's an absolute truth. And that's one of the ways that I think that they can generate more interest in African-Americans and more participation is increasing the amount of baseball scholarships that are available. If you have, you know, an African-American star as a young prep high school kid that's great in football, great in baseball, you know, somebody like Ricky Henderson was, you know, he might have dozens of opportunities to continue his career in college football because you can just hand out scholarships left and right with that. In baseball, it's more restrictive, and the players have to be – teams have to be more selective, so there's less opportunity. So that's important. And, you know, the RBI programs that you mentioned as well, you know, they're great, and I really think they're starting to bear some fruits there with this change in trends. But, you know, as good as they are, they're only located in some of the major cities. You know, there are so many smaller African-American – you know, there's – one in Kansas City, there's Los Angeles, you know, Compton.
See, it's different for me, dude. Like, I grew up in East Baltimore. You know, I had two buses I took to the stadium. My dad and I went to 15 to 30 games a year, depending. I mean, like, it was near me. You know where it really struck me? Ben McDonald's doing the Orioles games now, so I'll give Ben a plug because I love Ben, even though he's not allowed to talk to me anymore, but that's okay. You know, Ben was like the silver spoon 1-1 overall, right? He was going to change the face of Oriole baseball. He came in. And I'm covering the team 92, 93 when it's my 30th year on radio. So when they opened Camden Yards was really the first year I was in the locker room, but I had covered the team at the paper for years before that. We were talking to Juan Nieves, no hitter, me being in his locker back in 87, 2 weeks ago when John Means threw the no, no, but I guess through all of this and going back into the 80s and thinking about where all of it was and seeing where it is now, you know, I look at Adam Jones here in Baltimore, just, to, you know, as an aside, all the years they had here with him, let him go to Japan and eat pretty good steak and sushi from what I'm seeing over there. He's having a pretty good time. Yeah. But the opportunities that were have been made available in cities, Ben McDonald said to me, we went out to lunch in 93, it was about 93. It wasn't 94 yet because it wasn't the strike year. And I'm sitting with him having lunch in Toronto. And I'm covering the team. It was me, him, and Brad Pennington, who cut my hair the first time. And I said to Ben, I'm like, man, you know, so we saw he's interested, you know, hey, you grew up in Baltimore. Tell me about Baltimore. You know, I said, well, you know, I mean, Louie and games and me going to games. He said, you know, I'd only been to one big league game in my life before I pitched in one. And I thought, wow, that's Ben McDonald, right? He grew up in Louisiana, right? He said, my daddy took me to Houston to see Nolan Ryan pitch once at the Astrodome. Wow. And I thought, all right, even if he grew up in New Orleans, which he didn't, but if he grew up there, it would have been minor league. You know, like growing up where there's major league baseball, some dude like you growing up in New York, being Mets guy or Oriole guy in Baltimore, Chicago, your Cubs or White Sox. But man, just go outside the Beltway and see – boys and girls playing soccer, playing football, certainly basketball, right? All these other things that 100 years ago, every kid was playing baseball everywhere, including in the middle of Baton Rouge or wherever that was. We're going back 40 years now with Ben, right? I bring him up because that was a moment of clarity for me that I'm sitting with this 1-1 overall godlike figure who turned out to be a nice pitcher, and he was a wonderful guy, still is. But sitting and talking baseball with him, his childhood experience about how baseball came to him was completely different than me yelling, Mr. Robinson, can I have your autograph? You know, like most kids don't grow up with that experience, and if they do, it's a day trip. They get to go to a game here and again to have that kind of exposure to say, I want to be that when I grow up. Every kid in Baltimore wanted to be that, black or white, right? Because there were Paul Blairs and Frank Robinsons and all of that, right? I don't know what – I'm not 12 years old in Baltimore anymore, but I bet if I wanted to be with the cool kids, I'd have a lacrosse stick here.
Yeah, absolutely, and in New Jersey too, same thing with lacrosse. But they – yeah, it's not – you don't see that. I mean, when we were growing up, you'd wake up on a Saturday or Sunday morning, call as many of your friends as you could and go out to the sand lot or to a, you know, a little league field where the games weren't going on.
But you
on.
Could go to a game. You grew up in a place – you went to Yankees and Mets games, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's a different kind of exposure than anybody – they could ever have if you can go regularly. If you're on a trip, it's like going to a movie. It's like going to the zoo. It doesn't mean you go back. You know what I mean? Oh, I went to Camden Yards once when I was 12, went to a game. It doesn't make you a baseball fan, right? I mean, it doesn't get you juiced about doing it, playing it, getting in the cage, and having a lifelong experience with baseball that's changing dramatically for all of us, right? I mean, even guys our age watch it now and say, I don't know what the hell this is, and I don't know if I'm interested.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's a great point, too. I mean, there's so many – I call them stupid changes with the game that it's alienating, you know, people like our age and older, and it doesn't seem like it's necessarily bringing in new fans.
Rocco, you, me, and bring five of my idiot friends, five of your Jersey dogs. We all get together. We got beer, crabs. We'll even eat your peppers and onion, whatever. And we sit together in a room and we're all just bullshitting. And I'm like, I got one for you. I got one. Ready? Let's put a guy on second base in the 10th inning. All right. And it's a great idea, guys. What do you think? Who likes it? Who likes that idea? Who comes up with this?
Not anybody. It's funny. You mentioned my background. I used to be an NCAA Division II softball coach. That was proposed into NCAA softball when I was coaching.
Did Eddie Fainer propose that? Who was the?
Yeah, the NCAA proposed, you know, the speed up rule, and I opposed it then. I said, no, this is the NCAA. You can't be putting runners on second base. I mean, to think that I was so opposed to it, you know, 10 years ago on the NCAA level, and now it's happening in Major League Baseball. I mean, that just blows my mind. That's just none of us would. what fan would ever think that's a great idea? And who the hell? It's just,
my dad didn't hate the DH. You know what I mean? My dad was a traditionalist, but my dad didn't hate the DH. He thought, right, these guys can't hit. Let's, you know, I mean, they moved the mound up and down in 68. The DH comes in 73. Look, I was a guy that thought interleague play was stupid, and it is. It's still stupid. 25 years later, it's still a bad idea. It's bad for the All-Star game. It's bad for the World Series. Right. It's just, it's not interesting. Yankees and Mets, again. Orioles and Nationals, again. Right. And none of it gets anywhere. I don't know what changes they've made. And, dude, my last name's Aparicio. Okay? I'm trying to find one thing about it that's better. Like, literally, I know one. City Field's better than Shea Stadium. There you go. I'll drop the mic with that. I'll let you have that, Rob.
I'll go with Camden Yards being better than Memorial. So that those kind of changes. But what I always say, too, is if they went back to the old way with any of these rules, who would complain? You know, if they said, forget it, no more runners on second base, no more seven-inning doubleheaders, there would be no pushback.
I went to a game about 5 years ago. It was when Ray Lewis went in the Hall of Fame, because I remember it vividly, because you have these moments of clarity. I said it, I've been at 2,500 baseball games. You know what I mean? This is what I did for my life until a couple of years ago when I just decided, screw these people. I'm just going to go talk about other things with more interesting people. And when a good baseball conversation comes, I'm happy to accept it. But I'm sitting in Pittsburgh in the upper deck. Now, I had done 30 baseball ballparks in 30 days, okay? So I did that in 15. That's how much I love baseball. Go look it up. We swabbed for the bone marrow registry. Lots of teams were awesome. Some teams were jerks. I've held it against all of them. but 6 years later, in 15, I had so much fun just doing it. I wasn't watching the game so much. I was involved in two no-hitters that went to the seventh on that trip, one at Yankee Stadium, one in San Diego. I had rain delays. I mean, some nights I sat on the roof with no tickets, no access, no friends. Some nights I had a backstage pass and a press pass. Some nights my wife threw out the first pitch, and we were honored on the screen. Like, I had every experience you could imagine on this trip. But the Pittsburgh day, like, I was with Mike Tomlin. We swabbed. Clemente said, we had a big day. Clemente Museum, all that. So I didn't, like, watch the game. Go back two summers later, and it was 17, I think, when Ray Lewis went to Hall of Fame. 17, maybe 18, but whatever it was. On the way back, we went to Pittsburgh. I had 250 Ravens fans with me in Canton, Ohio, and I thought my trip's going to be the best because we're going to stop in Pittsburgh, get a Primanti, go to a Pirates game on the way back. I had three busloads of people that I already had a ticket for that opted to not go to the game.
Wow.
They just said, we want to go straight home on Sunday. We don't want to stop in Pittsburgh and go to a baseball game. Now, these are people going to spending $1,000 to go out to Canton, Ohio, and it's on the way. Okay. So that's first thing. So I had two buses that we diverted to Pittsburgh. I said, the people that don't want to go, get on that bus. You go straight home. The people that want to go to Pittsburgh, see a ball game, and we'll only stay seven innings. I promise. It'll be just like a doubleheader. So literally we left before, there wasn't much traffic at this point. They were on their way down. It was Pedro. Who was the third baseman that we had here? Alvarez. Is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
They were giving away his shirts to kids under 12, and it was that 1979 Pirates shirt that no one in my town would want, that gold thing, right? So I get up in the upper deck. I'm at PNC, and I had been there the year before, and there's nobody there. I'm up in right field, and I got a sandwich and a beer, and I'm looking down on the field, and I don't recognize the game of baseball. It's the first time in my life. I'm on the upper deck in right field, and I'm looking down. The left fielder's in center field. The center fielder's in right field. Right. The third baseman's at second base. The shortstop is in, I don't know, in the second baseman. I looked at the field, and I grabbed my phone, and I took a picture. And I think I put it on Facebook. And I said, I'm in Pittsburgh. Nobody wants to be at this game. I got lifer Oriole fans that love Ray Lewis, that love football, that don't even want to see the stadium. And Pittsburgh Stadium's a top five stadium. It's one of the best stadiums. Like, just to go there and get a beer on the way home, you would do it. Nobody wants to be there. Now I'm in the upper deck, and I'm looking at the game. And for the first time in my life, I looked at the shift a different way, because maybe I had only seen it behind home plate or whatever. And I looked at it. It was so asymmetrically. It looked like everybody was sitting near me because I was in the upper deck in right field. And I'm looking at the city. The reason I picked right field, such a beautiful view in Pittsburgh. There's nobody around. I'm wearing my Ravens hat, pissing them all off because we all decided to do that. And from that moment forward, I've never been able to look at the shift the same way as a fan, having watched baseball my whole life, and thought to myself, What do people that don't watch baseball think of this if this is their first exposure to it? Like, how do you get interested in it if you've never been? And how do you stay if you've always been?
Yeah, and that's a great point about the shift. I mean, you think back to our day, and it's, or, you know, even going back way, way back, it's hit them where they ain't. You know, and if we're watching baseball in the 80s and there's a giant shift up there.
Wade Boggs bunts and laughs at them while he walks to first base.
He's bunting doubles. You know, Tony Gwynn, wherever they give him give him a little bit of a haul, and he's putting the ball through. But it's, you know, it was not just those guys. And that, for me, my thing with the shift was, at one point they were shifting the big time lefty power hitters. Fine, I understood that. Then they started shifting against the slap hitters. You know, the guys that hit 12 homers a year. And those guys aren't even trying to take advantage of it. That's when that was my enlightening moment there with the shift. Like, I could understand home run hitters maybe going for the big shot, but when these little guys aren't doing it, that, to me, that makes no sense.
Well, the whole game has changed dramatically. I mean, you watch football now and watch even Ray Lewis and Ed Reed hit guys. They don't hit like that in football. Mm-hmm. It hasn't diminished football for me that guys aren't getting Darryl Stingley. You know what I mean? I don't need that, right? Mm-hmm. But with baseball, I look at it now, and I even see these minor league games where there's 26, 28 strikeouts in a game. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, this is the educational portal to doing this. Like, you're training everyone to hit a home run at every level. Look, I'm Venezuelan. I heard every Latin joke there was about not walking off the island and, mm-hmm. you know, having to swing the bat. And I get all of that in that environment. I don't know who the nerds are that are running it. Cause I literally, when I watch it, I'm, the World Series alone last year, the way pitching is being used, and I get the value, and they don't want to pay these guys. They don't want to blow their arms out. I get there were only 60 games last year, and this might be a little different from a pitching standpoint. But my God, if my father sat up over Gardens of Faith, plot 14, and came back and went to a game with me, he'd say, what the hell is this? Let's go do something else. That's what my dad would say. My dad loved baseball, but I don't know that he would recognize it. And there are times – when I look at it, not time, most of the time. I mean, whether it's the players, the stats, the analytics, the launch angle. I mean, all these statistics, seams and rotation and okay, but how does that make it better for a 10-year-old kid to get interested in it?
Right, it doesn't, and it's boring. I mean, the ball's not put in play. It's, you know, it's walks, strikeouts, and home runs. And yeah, home runs are exciting, but what are you getting, you know, one or two a game here and there? It's not, you know, it's not enough to make up for the fact that, you know, the hit and run's gone, the stolen bases are gone, the guy that goes up there looking to hit the ball is gone. You know, it's just, it's out of balance. It's boring. It's not a lot of action. And I do most of my writing. We have a baseball history site, me and my buddy, a couple people, called ball9.com. And we write and we have podcasts and we do a lot of stuff with this nonsense that's going on in baseball and trying to be a voice against it. You know, we incorporate former players, we interview former players about it. Great example.
I can imagine, you know, Baltimore, the old line players. I mean,
I do every Friday, I interview a former player. A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Jim Gentile, awesome Baltimore Oriole.
One of my dad's favorites.
Oh, he was, people love him. We got such a great response to that. I said, what do you think about the game today? We were going to set up an interview. He said, I have to go to Texas to watch the Orioles play the Rangers, so I'll catch you next week. So I said, oh, you're going to game still? You're 80-something, you're, you know, 87, I think he was. And what do you think of today's game? He goes, I don't watch it. He goes, I went down because my son lives there and visit my grandkids and just happen to go to the game.
Well, the level of engagement is difficult with 162 games. It really is. You know, I mean, even – I've been through a plague and I'm trying to figure out where the value in my life and my time is. Right. And mm-hmm. even for people to play the game, I think it's, it has issues. I love it. You love it. I want to love it again. This is where I live. I live literally, I took this picture out my window. This is where I live. I moved down here to go to Orioles games. I'm selling my place now because we probably didn't go to enough, to be really honest with you, and don't have enough plans to go to enough of them. Rocco Constantino, I bitch about baseball all the time, but when I bring people on and I say, you're still engaged and watching it every night, you're a Mets guy, I'm an Orioles guy, that probably plays into this a little bit too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, just malfeasance and mismanagement and all sorts of things that play into the experience of I'm giving my life to you. You a Knicks fan by any chance?
A little bit. I follow them. Actually,
yeah, I mean, they're having fun this week, right? Like, I don't know any about that. I don't care. Right. Whatever, Patrick Ewing. But, like, it sucks losing for long stretches of time and not having any hope. It really does. Yeah. And having bad ownership. My Browns fans will all know about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, heck yeah. Hey, the Ravens benefited from that, at least, you know.
We're just good at what we do.
Well, that's true. It took coming from Cleveland over to Baltimore to get them guys a Super Bowl.
Well, for you with the Mets, is there hope?
I think there is now with new ownership. I mean, that came out of nowhere. And you talk about bad ownership and just, you know, one day, you know, I open up, you know, there were no rumors of it. You just open up the internet and basically the Wilpons are going to sell the team. And like, I mean, that was like being reborn as a Mets fan because there is hope a little bit there. And, you know, they're sitting there in first place and they have a lot of injuries, but that says a lot about baseball. I've watched every game. I sit there and curse at the game. They're not playing it the right way. They're not running the bases. They're making all these mistakes. And somehow they're sitting in first place because everybody else is making more mistakes than them. And it's just, you know, the quality of play is definitely not what it was. You're starting to hear a lot of voices speak out against it. I think the nonsense with Blake Snell in the World Series last year might be a turning point. You know, you started to hear some players speak up against it. But I think you're going to need to hear some players. It's the players who I think have to take the game back and say, no, this is nonsense. I'm not going to try and crank one into a shift when they're giving me, you know, open things. We've seen Bryce Harper bunt a couple times this year. And, you know, people need to do that and get the game back in line. And
it's a game of adjustments, as they say, right?
Yep, exactly.
Hey, Rocco, it's great to visit with you, man. Good luck with your book. The book is Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier, the story of African Americans in Major League Baseball, past, present, and future. I'll hold it up here because when I hold it here, it disappears. It's like a disappearing act. It's good. Now you see it? Now you don't. So go get it while it's still here. Rocco, appreciate you, man. Good luck with your website out there and all baseball pursuits. And if you get to Baltimore, crab cake at Camden Yards. All right?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Why you would leave really Santa happy. Barbara. If I get to Santa Barbara, I'll just drink some wine or something.
You're out there. We'll go out to State Street, have a little party there.
That's what I'm talking about. I've never made it north of Zuma Beach somehow when I'm there. I don't know. It's a long way up the coast there.
Right.
Rocco Costantino joining us from the West Coast on the book and baseball, Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier. You can find me anywhere the internet travels at BaltimorePositive.com. All of our friends gassing up at Rofo and picking up that chicken. Chicken Palooza around the corner coming soon to a Rofo near you, as well as my crab cake tour, which is underway now. Episode 1 in the books of Fadley's. Episode 2 at Costas Inn coming soon. We are WNSD.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking baseball and Baltimore Positive.